grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about hey now, hey now, hey now, Aiko, Aiko, Ande, Giacomo Fino, Anane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Girl, pop the corks.
Pop the corks, Henty.
Oh my goodness, we are here. It's the Las Culturistas podcast. To my right, you can't see it, but he is on my right. Let me tell you, it's Bowen Yang.
And to my other right is... That doesn't make sense.
A.K.A. the left.
The left is my beautiful friend, Matt Rogers. Guys...
You think I'm beautiful?
I think you're beautiful. Guys, this is a sad announcement. This is going to be the last episode for a few weeks. I am...
Even I was nervous there. I was like, what are you saying?
Oh, no. I just mean we're going on an even more extended hiatus.
Well, Bowen is about to embark on a little trip. Go ahead. Tell him about it.
I'm embarking on a trip to the beautiful climes of China. And it's going to be a couple weeks, and then I'm back end of October.
So then we'll resume Las Culturistas, and I myself am going on my own trip tomorrow.
And where will that be?
I'm going to Orlando, girl, and you knew where I was going. Yes. Because you know I only vacation in one spot. Orlando, bitch. I only go to Orlando on vacation. I've been to Europe once earlier in the year.
Didn't love it.
Now that I did it, I'm good. We'll go to Orlando for the rest of my life.
Sure.
My boyfriend Henry, it'll be his first time at the Universal Orlando Resort, and I am ready.
Great.
I'm really excited about it, actually. I have the app, mm-hmm. and I've been looking at the wait times. I've been doing my research. This will be the first time I do Halloween Horror Nights,
and
which
you
is
scary,
super scary. I scare very easily, but I'm braving it.
Well, wow, that's so exciting for both
of
us.
I'm excited, girl.
And guys, we have an indelible guest with us this week.
Literally, we were like, we're not gonna have an episode for a long time. Who can we get as a guest that'll be a true goddamn home run.
Home run, a draw, honey.
A draw. You know him.
You know him.
He's a writer correspondent on Seriously TV.
With amazing series such as Unboxing or Shutting Down Bullshit.
Shutting Down the Bullshit,
oh,
baby.
Incredible. He's also Carlos on the seminal podcast Welcome to Night Vale, and he's the creator of the brilliant series Every Single Word. Guys, give it up
for Dylan Marin. Hello, Dylan.
Hi, guys.
Oh, Dylan, I love you.
Oh, I love you. I truly love you guys. I feel like a fangirl of you guys.
No,
so it's
an honor
to be here.
Guys, we haven't had our wine yet. Cheers.
Oh, we have some red wine. Let's talk about the brand of red wine we have. It's called La Fleur Amour.
La Fleur Amour, the flower of love. It's Pinot Noir. Probably bottled last month.
Delicious. It's a celebratory night because we have Dylan on. I'm so excited that you're here.
Dylan, I'm so excited to be here.
How
really,
are
really.
You? How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. I have the cold that's going around to every single human.
Yes. Oh my God, I've been willing it away. Because it can't ruin my Orlando trip.
It won't. Nothing. What can ruin an Orlando
nothing.
Trip?
Nothing. Well.
All right. Well.
When I was six, I was going to go to Disney World for the first time, and I got sick, and I tried to hide it from my parents for so long because I didn't want them to know, and they were thinking about canceling the trip, and...
Because of your sickness?
And then ultimately I pulled through.
All right, good. I was going to say, I was hanging on a moment there.
That
was, I was really good.
That
was really
Joseph
upset.
Campbell hero's journey shit.
It was.
Literally, wow. I'm like, I stopped breathing. Like, did he go? I thought for a second that you're one of those people that have never been to Disney World.
No. I've been to Disney World when I was six. I went back to Disney World when I was 12. Mm-hmm.
You haven't been since.
But here's the arc.
So much for you.
Here's the arc
there.
Of Disney World for you. As you grow older, you go for the first time as a kid. It's the most amazing, mind blowing thing
is
in the world.
Magic.
Yeah, and then maybe some people are privileged enough to go. This is for me at least. Speaking for myself, you go back when you're like middle school, and you're like you think you're above it, and you don't. You purposefully don't enjoy it, and then you go back as an adult, and it's the best.
And it kills.
See, I haven't been as an adult. I watched with bated breath your series Four Nights in Orlando.
Well, thank you.
And the work was terrific.
I mean, Dylan. You know.
Thank you.
Let me tell you. So I'll be going to Universal Orlando.
Yes.
I am not going to Disney World because I have some beef with Disney World.
And meanwhile,
I feel like it's just not
Walt Disney being a racist. Is that
Walt Disney being a racist? You know, and also anti-Semitic.
Yeah,
well, yeah, the same thing. A Venn diagram.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure he was like, I'm sure he was extremely racist, but like, I feel like his claim to fame for me is his anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. The rumor is that he was buried in Nazi regalia.
Oh.
This is a rumor.
Right.
But I think.
Sure.
I think someone told me that, and I think they're credible.
And you just went with the conspiracy.
I think Sudi told me that.
And we trust Sudi.
I trust her.
Okay, well, you'll be at Universal. I'll be at Disneyland Shanghai.
Yeah, where it's a little different.
It's a little different. It's the biggest of the Disney parks.
Oh?
Yes.
It's the single biggest. Like, it's showing off. It's not as big as Disney World.
They've got a really cool Tron roller coaster that you have to do.
Yeah.
And you have to report back to me on how it is.
And they've got a Soarin' there, too, but it's Soarin' over the U.S., over
so
America.
So you guys do... I understand.
Yes.
But you guys do roller coasters.
I'm not a roller coaster person.
I am.
Okay.
And but you?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it you get nauseous, or it's because you're
fear.
Scared?
It's okay. Fear.
Yeah.
I don't get nauseous, although I went on a vacation with my husband last summer, mm-hmm. and we saw the craziest ride.
Where was?
It was in Paris.
Oh.
And it was at this, it wasn't this like brick and mortar fair, like amusement park. It was like a setup. And, basically, you were strapped into a seat and you started spinning on its axis.
No.
But then it was on this long thing, and so it's like,
yes, I've seen those things.
No, I can't do those carnival rides.
So no, right. So I decided because I know that my husband loves roller coasters,
okay,
that I was like,
okay,
you know what? If he says that it looks fun, like, I'm going to challenge myself to do it. I cried.
No, Dylan, I'm so sorry.
I liked it.
Oh, what?
This is like my stock.
This is another Joseph Campbell.
Yeah,
here.
I know. No, I involuntarily teared because the fear was so much.
You were the like anticipation and like the anxiety.
And it's also, I just
a lot of
like
adrenaline.
What happens to my stomach. Like, it's like,
yeah,
it just drops.
But you
that's
loved it?
The zero G,
I
baby.
Loved it. And it was easier when we, like, oh God. But eventually we started going backwards. You know what I mean? Like it's dipping down. And
no,
it's
thanks.
Much easier to go backwards for your stomach.
Oh, okay.
And then I just, like, gritted my teeth the whole time.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do anything that really flips you around, like, because I'll get very nauseous. And my body is very sensitive to, like, the manipulation of, like, G-forces.
Yeah.
Like, whenever, like, you're really kind of getting, like, fucked around. But, I mean, I love to go fast, and I love to be very high.
Oh, see, that's the thing. Like, I will love a Tower of Terror or, like, a drop tower kind of thing. Those are fun for me.
So,
those
Tower of Terror,
scary.
You're a fan.
Such
oh,
a huge
big
fan.
Time
are,
fan.
How are you feeling?
Oh. Let me tell you, Dylan, it's really tough.
Yeah.
And so, just for everyone that's listening, I feel bad for everybody out there in California because your Disneyland's Tower of Terror is getting changed, people. It's
to
becoming
what?
Guardians of the Galaxy, a movie that Bowen and I walked the fuck out of.
That's right. We got bored of it.
Oh, 100%. Because what was that movie? Did you see it?
Yeah. I
did you like
oh,
it?
You didn't
not
like
only
it
did I see it. Well, no, but like I don't really – I'm not a huge fan of any of these like – franchise mm-hmm. movies where it's so obvious that they're just selling you like
the fan
entry
service.
Point
oh,
to, a,
sure.
yeah,
yeah.
to a brand.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like Marvel where it's like, and don't get me wrong, I love superhero movies, but Marvel only feels like you're in a gift shop. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like,
what it
it's
is.
It's because Marvel is now Disney's and Disney is only about the bottom line.
Yeah. Totally.
Disney will never do anything of quality again.
But, but I feel like Disney is in their like name brand stuff, they're really good at masking it.
Mm-hmm.
You
oh,
know,
sure.
So like Finding Dory, I'm like, fuck, yes, I'm there.
But you saw it?
Oh, Finding Dory?
Did you like it?
Yes.
I was so let down.
No, I couldn't even bring myself
wow.
to go put myself in front of that.
Dylan,
I said, no.
Finding Nemo, I cry and without fail every time I see
oh
it.
Oh my God.
But Finding Dory, I was like, all right.
Finding Dory, I sobbed.
What? When? What part? When,
oh my
when,
God.
Okay, spoiler alert, when she meets them again?
Yeah.
Okay.
when she meets
that was beautiful.
Oh my god!
But then the rest of it was like
also Chosen Family. It's a queer Disney movie.
Oh, it is a queer Disney movie. You're right. You're right.
Wow,
that's how I read it.
Oh, okay. Well, then Dylan is just a little more sophisticated than
we are. Queer artist.
I'm just saying. I literally didn't even watch a trailer for it. I was like,
Wow.
It's a weird thing that happens with me where like when a new animated movie is about to come out, something about me already inherently wants to avoid every new animated movie.
I don't
Big Hero 6, the second I saw the trailer for it, I was like, I hate this.
Why?
And then honestly, when I actually sit down and see them, I do sort of like them. But there's something about animated movies, like, I don't know what it is. I can't diagnose myself. Once I see that there's an animated movie coming out, I'm like, already mad.
Wait,
I don't know why.
You didn't justify that. I reject that because you're like, there's something about this whole swath of entertainment that I don't like, but I don't know what it is. I don't accept.
No, and I'm telling you, I wish to be told what's wrong. Because there's something going on where, like, I'm really only excited if I know it's a musical. That's what it is. If it's a musical, I'm all about. Like, I knew Frozen was going to be a musical, so I was like, yeah, of course Frozen. Yeah,
but also Frozen isn't that good.
Shut up, Owen.
Yep, sorry.
Frozen 2, who's excited, Elsa gets a girlfriend.
No, happening?
No, I mean, but Idina Menzel said she's for it.
Oh, right.
Idina Menzel's like, I'll do anything that makes Frozen, money.
Frozen is also a queer narrative. I will appreciate that.
Frozen is a queer narrative. I mean, it's so liberal what we call a queer narrative because we're like love between sisters. We're like, we'll take it. Anything to women saying they love each other.
Right. The first time we saw Frozen, we were with a bunch of gay men.
Yeah,
it was us and Dave Mazzoni and Sudi
was there.
And we were all the gay men. So we were all there watching it, and like it was all gays, and literally like we were all just kind of watching it, enjoying it, and then Let It Go happen, and everyone was like, yes! You better work, girl! You better let the rain fall, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And
rainfall.
Let the rain fall, girl. Then I saw it with a bunch of kids, and it was just different. It's like,
that's interesting.
They were like,
I saw it twice in the same holiday weekend.
Oh, good.
Once with my husband's family in California, and once with my husband's family in Seattle. Two different families.
With the same. Because they both wanted to see it so badly. Yeah.
And there are many.
Did Todd see it with you twice too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
no, just dealing with his family both times.
I don't know.
And it was all the kids. It was like to bring the kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And because we were around kids, we couldn't exclaim like that during Let It Go. So Todd and I just whispered to each other, yes, bitch.
Yes.
As she started building her ice castle, which is beautiful.
It's a beautiful
There's a moment towards the end where she's like walking towards her balcony and she's serving her shoulders. She's giving her
mug.
Face, giving mug, giving like the hair comes down, sleeves. Girl, it's all about the sleeves.
It's all about the sleeves. Yeah. Dylan, were you gonna say something about the ice castle? It is a beautiful moment.
I love the ice castle.
Okay, guys.
Were you gonna say something?
I love it,
guys. I feel like a crazy person for saying this, but one of my favorite, not only just animated movies, but all time movies, girl. Is Wreck-It Ralph.
You've said this before. Honestly,
it is. You hated it?
No, I haven't seen it. I just wanted to cast
judgment. I think you would love this
Wreck-It
movie.
Wreck-It Ralph?
Another queer narrative. He's an outcast.
Okay, so that's all it takes. It's a perfectly...
He doesn't have friends, right?
He's queer.
He's gay.
It's a perfectly good movie, but it's
genius.
It's just funny to me that you think that that's more creative and forward thinking than something like Monsters, Inc. Because let me tell you what my problem with Wreck-It Ralph is, and then
all
you
right,
can respond. Wreck-It Ralph had the opportunity to expose us to so many different worlds.
Which it did.
It exposed us to like three worlds, Bowen. You get like the like Sarah Silverman like go-kart world that they're in. You get the Wreck-It Ralph world, and then I mean
the Jane Lynch like
the Jane Lynch Halo type world, but then there's like not much else. I wanted to see like the narrative progress through all the different kinds of worlds.
It's such a good movie, but all right,
I don't think it's as good as Monsters.
Keep jerking off to Monsters Inc. Dylan, let's ask the question we ask all of our guests.
Well, you didn't even give Dylan an opportunity.
Oh, Dylan, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say I remembered another amazing Pixar movie that did go into all the worlds.
What?
Which was Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Inside Out actually.
So you didn't like it, but
no. It's not that I didn't like it. I just was going to say it's more controversial than people think. Like, there are people out there that really don't like Inside Out.
Sure.
Why?
I don't get it.
Because they find it basic.
Nicole Conlon said that when she was on the show, and I was like, I kept my mouth shut, but I cried.
That's
another movie that
I don't love
with.
Inside Out either.
I love it. Oh, boy.
I love it.
Thank you, Dylan.
Well, I'm wrong.
Okay, Dylan, we're going to ask you.
Two against one. That means I'm wrong. Just so everyone knows, when you're outvoted, it means you're wrong.
Yeah.
So remember that on November 8th.
Yeah. We're going to... Okay, let's ask Dylan what we ask all of our guests.
Yes.
What was the culture growing up for you that made you think culture is for me?
When did Dylan and Aaron decide, culture? I'm interested in that. Culture's for me.
We're talking books, TV shows, movies.
But it's open to interpretation.
Video games, whatever you want. It doesn't have to be any of those things either. Could be your mom's cooking, you know?
It was the moment in The Witches when Angelica Houston took off her cape.
Yeah.
And it went from her purple clutch to a dress.
That is so specific and beautiful.
Well, it's amazing.
And it was that mixed with the poster.
Ah.
Of The Witches. Mm-hmm. And the poster, you know those things when the poster is just so good that you stare at it for a while? And
yes,
you,
I do.
And project onto it what movie you want it to be.
Yes, sure. Absolutely.
It was the movie I wanted it to be.
Thank God.
And that was the moment that it matched. So I feel like that is that's like when I started my obsession with all of this stuff. And then I was that kid who, like, I had copious Nate Silver style Academy Award spreadsheets for
Nate Silver.
Nate Silver. Nate Silver. And it's funny because that was like, I know I'm jumping around here, but this is my second, which is that, you don't hear, like, I didn't see people making Academy Awards spreadsheets, but it's like when you're alone in your room, you're like, I must.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, I researched all of the awards that don't even get televised or get written up.
BAFTAs.
BAFTAs. Sorry, I'm going to start a Kickstarter for the BAFTAs. Get televised.
You're like National Board of Review top 10, honey.
Yes. And it was really hard to put, anytime there was a tie, it really upset me.
Oh,
it's
bullshit.
Add another row.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
You row
so you literally
formatting was an issue.
You kept the statistics of what the precursors were saying.
Yeah.
All year round, and so you could.
And so I would. You would see years like the year that Ellen Burstyn won everything, but then Julia Roberts won the big ones for Erin Brockovich.
Yes.
What was Ellen Burstyn in that year? In 2000?
Requiem for a Dream,
of course.
Yeah, oh, we're sisters about this, baby.
I
used to do the same.
We
thing.
talked
really?
About this last.
This
episode.
Was like what our last episode was about.
Was prognosticating Oscars. Specifically.
We had Brandon Scott Jones on, and
My God!
And then we all Rain Manned like the years, like what one best picture in 1994?
Let's
try that. Let's do it again. We did this last time. Let's do it again.
This is repeat content.
No,
content, but if you could do it,
okay,
the viewers will
let me
will,
shall,
the viewers c-
shall
the
I
listeners.
Work backwards.
Come on okay,
you
want to
walk backwards. Okay, so walk backwards,
or I could do,
okay, so like this year best pick, we were, you want to stick to best picture or best,
yeah,
like,
so
let's
the
pick
Spotlight
a Spotlight
Birdman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see, 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is the one thing people hold on to when they're like, film isn't racist. They're like, 12 Years a Slave one. Okay, so then
you're not even thinking numerically about this.
This is 2011.
12
you're
Years
up to.
Is, no, 12 Years a Slave was 2014.
Okay, sorry.
Won.
Hurt
and then
Locker?
2013.
No.
Hurt Locker was 2010. Her,
oh my God, it's been such a long time.
Has been a long time.
It was the one that was not Zero Dark Thirty.
No. So before
God, this is so hard now. All of a sudden it's hard
again.
Oh, it's
like a very male movie.
Oh, Argo.
Argo.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. It was Argo.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 Years a Slave, then Argo before that. And
no wonder why you forget it, because it sucks.
Before Argo was The King's Speech.
Yes.
Ugh.
Before The King's Speech was The Hurt Locker. Mm-hmm. Before The Hurt Locker
the artist.
Was 2009.
2011, The Artist.
No. It was The Artist. Argo, The Artist, The King's Speech,
yes.
Hurt Locker. And then
we're in
2009.
Yes.
This is Slumdog
Millionaire.
Slumdog.
2008, No Country for
Old
Men.
Yes.
2007, It's the Year Dreamgirls wasn't nominated.
Crash? No,
Crash was 2006.
Before Slumdog Millionaire.
Before
I think
Slumdog.
No Country for Old Men was the Dreamgirls year.
Yeah, No Country for Men was after. Dreamgirls year was... Oh man, what?
Maybe I should pull it up.
That was
just
the
like
year
a
of
reference.
Babel and
Babel was definitely the year of Dreamgirls.
Rinko Kikuchi.
Because I remember that Jennifer Hudson was up there with Rinko and Adriana.
Yes. Yeah. And
Cate Blanchett for
Little Miss Sunshine was also nominated that year. Oh. But I know No Country for Old Men was before, but what was the year of Dreamgirls?
I think that was that year.
It was Crash.
I don't think so. No, Crash was Brokeback year.
Brokeback. Crash was Brokeback.
Well, I'm going to look it up right now.
Look it up, my love.
But so the while we're looking this up, the point is, I mean, we all share this.
Yeah. And so what is it? Did you explore this?
Okay, it's gay competition. It's gay sports. It's because we all have this instinct to like see what's going to win. It's something about American culture, I think.
And you know what it is? I'm reading Phoebe Robinson's book right now, You Can't Touch My Hair. It's so good. And her opening chapter is a love letter to award shows. But then she sort of turns it around and she's like, but you know what? Like, the reason I was so obsessed with that is because I wanted to be on that stage and I saw.
Mm.
And she was like, but like, it never made. That was my only like escape into my ego of being like, I can be this fabulous person who's on stage. And like, maybe that was it for me. And for both of us, and we talked about this last episode, for both of us, it was the 97 Oscars when Titanic won.
Mm.
That was like the big, that was the seed that got planted for us that like got the obsession.
I have the result of what it was. And you know why we forgot it? It's because it's another fucking washed out white man movie. The Departed.
Oh,
what a shame.
What a fame.
What a shame.
What a fame.
What a fame.
Listen to this bullshit. Years and years and years in a row. We've got fucking The Departed and then Crash before that year, which is a cop out. Million Dollar Baby, which is like a last minute Clint Eastwood cop out.
Return of the King.
Chicago.
Then Chicago.
Oh,
which
Chicago.
Like, which, thank Christ.
I saw it 5 times in theaters.
I memorized the whole fucking dance at the end.
Oh my God,
Velma.
With the guns.
He does have it. Dylan, I have to ask you a question because this was a big controversial moment in our last episode.
Oh my God, please.
Thoughts on Moulin Rouge?
Oh.
Wow. You're outing me.
What? What do you...
You don't like
uh-oh,
it?
Uh-oh, uh-oh.
Worse.
You better go... You hate it?
Oh. Worse.
What?
You never seen it?
Oh!
Dylan!
Stop. That's not irreprehensible.
So
not irreprehensible.
Here is what I have seen 50 times. The opening number of Sparkling Diamonds. If you want to talk about moments like
that's
culture not, took
oh
my breath away.
Uh-huh.
So this sounds bad, right? This sounds bad as someone who like considers himself to be an artist, but I watched it and I got bored.
No.
So instead of finishing it,
I understand.
I watched the scene with the swing over
Diamonds
and over and over again,
the
past
French
the time where the movie would be.
It's
so
for love,
and then she comes down.
That's an amazing moment.
Yeah,
but you know what? I don't blame Dylan for this because our culture is so fragmented now, and I have trouble sitting through movies. I have trouble sitting through shows.
I don't like to sit through movies. I find them long, but I don't understand not at least watching Moulin Rouge to be like, I gotta fucking see what the rest of this fever dream is gonna be.
It's a fever dream. Okay,
it's all a fever dream.
That is
homework for you then.
Yeah,
you need to sit through Moulin Rouge. I mean.
You gotta.
Marin.
I know.
It's
I
Dylan.
Know.
We're talking to Dylan Marin, and he's not seen.
I haven't seen The Sound of Music though. So
you made a post about it.
Yeah, I did.
Henry hadn't seen The Bodyguard.
Right. Yeah. I said when Henry told me that he hadn't seen The Bodyguard. You've never seen The Bodyguard?
I know all the songs. I listen to the soundtrack. The soundtrack is like the most important part.
It truly isn't. It's about.
Okay,
it's about. It's about the
Kevin
movie.
And it's about Kevin and Whitney.
Kevin and Whitney.
No, it's not.
But you know what though?
That is an amazing, amazing film.
It's incredible.
She's a good actress.
She's totally serviceable.
She is. Her and Cinderella. She's fantastic.
Oh my
Cinderella.
God!
She's not. Brandy. She's not distracting in any way.
No, she's a phenomenal actress.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say phenomenal.
Yes, I think she's great.
The actor who played her sister.
Yeah,
she was the.
She killed.
Showstopper.
Yeah, she killed.
I'll
and there's
it.
There. You need to watch it. I just thought it was unusual that Henry hadn't seen The Bodyguard, but then I was like, also, to put this into perspective, I haven't seen this.
We all have our
music.
Holes. We all have our blind spots.
But The Bodyguard is so fucking good.
Okay, well, so it's Sound of Music. So.
It's such a gay classic.
No. No, you know, this is what happened. Matt and I, this is a historic moment. Matt and Sudi came over to my apartment back when The Sound of Music Live was airing on NBC.
Duh.
And we were like, oh God, we got to just tune in for this fucking train wreck. And then my DVR wasn't working, and then Matt like did a terrible job of hiding his disappointment and disdain. And so then we were like, you know what?
On brand for me.
we were like, all right, let's just do it. And we're like, yeah, let's just watch the original Sound of Music because Matt's never seen it. We put it on. Matt falls asleep within the first 30 minutes.
Oh, I think it was adrenaline.
No.
Because I was so excited to see the Carrie version. And then when that didn't happen,
and you missed the performance of a lifetime.
By Audra? By Carrie.
By Carrie.
I mean, come on. But did you guys hear? So there was all that kind of back and forth between fans and like people in the know. Like, should there be a live audience for these live musicals or not?
Yes.
And now they have made the decision. There will be for Hairspray. There will. I think for both, there's going to be a live audience for both.
Why didn't they learn from Legally Blonde when they aired it on MTV?
Yes, I remember that so well.
Which was like totally fine and great.
It was good. I loved
but it was much better than what they're doing now. It's so awkward, those silent moments.
To be honest with you, I was pro no audience because
until
I saw it, because I was like, well, the thing is, like, you want everyone at home to see the show. But then it's more interesting.
But it's
and
like
exciting.
Half movie, half show. Then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I've come.
It feels
on
it
this.
Feels a little too. It feels a little too mid century, or even like before that. It's like, oh, like when it was all on a sound stage.
No, I've come around on this.
Did
big
you
time.
Like Grease? Was that dynamic enough for you? Since it won over Lemonade at the Emmys.
Oh, that was bizarre.
What a tragedy.
Because how different were they?
I think that's the Hamilton
these things
mafia.
Are so bizarre.
That was, directed by the guy who directed Hamilton.
Right.
I didn't like Grease Live.
Because you were?
Because I was just
tired.
Disengaged, and I was tired. And, and I was, you know what? I was with my friend Mateo and my friend Amanda, and we were both just like, you know what? And we were just going into it being, like, dour, and that's probably, like, unfair.
Yeah, that absolutely is unfair, so, and it's absolutely why you didn't enjoy it, because it was perfectly fine.
That might be a comment on our viewing practices now.
Well, it's interesting to me because, like, whenever anyone has anything negative to say about these live musicals, there's something about me that's like, come on, man. Like, they're trying so hard.
Know,
like, people had all this... Henry had all this negative shit to say about Queen Latifah. And I was like...
Oh, I love her.
The woman's doing, like, a live musical. She's, like, performing. This is,
in
like,
what?
For kids. Like, oh, for The Wiz. And I was just like, nah. I was like, I think that this is really fun. Well, and, like, also,
I
like...
I think we all collectively felt that about The Wiz specifically. Because it was, like... really cool to just see an all-black cast.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But then I will go in on Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's the thing is that I've come into this with a preconceived notion that these are going to be failures because the first two were bad. And so The Wiz was so refreshing because it was good. Mm. And, Dana Owens. Gotta love Queen
I'm
Latifah.
I'm really excited for Hairspray Live.
Me too.
I love
think
Hairspray.
It's
going to
be great.
I think
Hairspray's really awesome. Good. Did you see it on – you ever see it live?
Yes. And in fact, Joe Firestone and I went in, do you know the Muni in St. Louis?
Mm-hmm, of course.
So we went to see it at the Muni.
Oh, God. It probably was fantastic.
It was incredible.
That's great. College days?
College days.
That's a good,
and
that's
a
good memory.
I got funnel cake, fried funnel cake fries.
Oh my God.
Please describe
so
what?
Okay. Not nearly as good as you would imagine.
Okay.
But... basically, so imagine funnel cake.
Yeah.
Now put it into rectangles, like little
strips
deep fried, double deep fried.
Okay.
And then the dipping sauce. Okay, you're thinking French fries, so you're thinking ketchup, right? Now take
jam.
The ketchup out and put in
cream
frosting. Anyway, so I sat and ate many orders of that while Joe and I watched Hairspray Live.
Phenomenal.
But yeah, I love Hairspray.
Yeah.
That's
that's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rocky's going to be great too.
Oh, Rocky. Rocky all on the whole has, I think, a weaker cast than Hairspray does. Like, it's like Victoria Justice.
Sure. I mean, Hairspray, you got Ariana Grande.
I think Ariana Grande is going to be so good as
Penny. She's going to be great. She's going to be good.
But the star is Tracy Turnblad, so I can't wait to see what she does.
Tracy.
Yeah, I think she's going to be great. I really do.
The star is going to be Tracy. And it's that new girl. It's always a new discovery. Introduction.
Oh, yes.
Guys, should we move on to our topic?
Yeah, let's move on to our topic at hand, which the title of this episode is
The Issues at Hand. Guys,
now, we're going to be kind of taking a little bit of a break until November. So it's going to be right before the election that we get back together. So there's been so much fucking garbage going on.
I know. Yeah.
A lot of garbage.
And I know that your job at Seriously, like entails that you tackle a lot of this garbage.
Yeah.
How do you,
how are you doing?
How do you approach it with like the amount of levity that is required of your tone of voice for the whole site or for the whole, you know, channel? Like, yeah, that must be so wearing. Like that must wear you out.
I think the way I always think about it is that these are like the hardest issues to talk about. Mm-hmm. But you have to make it accessible for people.
Yes.
And I've like worked in many worlds and existed in many worlds where it's had to, where like the way you talk to someone is like to teach them and it's very dry and it's very boring.
Didactic.
Exactly. That's the perfect word. And it's too didactic. And then, but like, if you like go in, if you kind of punch them in the gut, like with a wrench, or like that's
if you punch them with a wrench in the gut,
that's like the wrong metaphor. But the imagery I mean is like, you kind of like the anesthesia is comedy,
yeah,
and then you perform the surgery. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it.
Yeah, of course.
Ooh,
and it's that. Like
comedy is the way you get people to listen.
Yeah, and then once you disarm them, then you can sit them down. I mean, I think what I've learned from doing work on the internet is no matter what you say and no matter how you carefully say it, people are going to disagree with you. Disagreement, I love. But people are going to be deeply offended by what you say. And I say, you know, the people who I'm offending are mostly like straight white men.
Right. the Pepes. So,
yeah. Yeah. So
that's.
Yeah. But I, how do I deal with it? I don't know. I mean, I just think it's like all of these waves we're riding.
Yeah.
And you have turn off at some point.
Mm-hmm. I want to know because, you know, we spoke with, was it Nicole Silverberg?
Yeah,
we talked about this with.
She writes for
GQ and sometimes she'll get a lot of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine you get a lot of aggression towards you.
Dylan and I have talked about this in private. Because I had a day, and
I remember.
But it, you know what? Compared to what Dylan gets, Dylan gets projectiles,
right.
crazy things from,
which
just
is why I ask.
People.
I want to know, like, does it hurt your feelings?
I think you at first it did.
Mm-hmm.
Right at first, you're like, oh, you want me to die? You know,
right.
Like, I do this unboxing series and one person sent me a message just today that said you should unbox your own suicide. And, but so when you first get that, it's like, I won't get out of bed, you know?
Yeah.
And then you just become numb to it because,
but that's not a, that's
what,
not,
but what I mean is like, and I say this all the time. It's like the day that a collective of women of color is like, you have deeply offended us. I'll be like, I'm doing something wrong.
Right. Oh, for sure.
You know, and then but it's like if you follow all of these people back to their profiles, they have swastikas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're calling themselves openly white nationalists. So it's like. Okay.
So like, you know what? It's like
I'm not mourning the loss of your.
It hurts.
You're not a fan. I'm losing.
Exactly.
It hurts your feelings at first because it's hurtful language.
Right.
And then you walk it back, and then you say, "Oh, this person has their own disease, and so therefore, you know, what am I going to do? Stop doing my work?
Yeah.
And that's why, like. You do have to just let it roll off your back. I guess, because what are the other options?
There's no other option
because you're not going to teach them.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I do think it is important to know that these people are people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean this in the like way of radical acceptance. Like,
yeah.
I would never even think about the things that they write to me.
Oh, no.
But that being said, you follow them back and they're just like this high school boy.
Right.
Who is, I mean, by follow them back, I don't mean follow them back.
You mean, like,
I mean,
source
you,
them
you
back.
You see
to, yeah.
what their profile is. And you're like, oh, you're just a high school boy, like just figuring it out. Like, what a disservice this world has done to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that like you think that when you see someone who doesn't look like you express opinions that challenge your worldview, that they need to die. Mm-hmm. And you see this all around. We grew up, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we were growing up at a time when Eminem was the biggest deal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the havoc that Eminem wrought mm-hmm. for queer boys growing up.
Villainous.
And we ignore that now because the internet wasn't around then the way it is now mm-hmm. to have, like, what I would give to have read a think piece in seventh grade.
Right.
Being like, Eminem is bad for teenage boys. Mm-hmm. Even if I saw people pile up on that and teenage boys be like, oh, stupid. Like, just to know that thought exists, but you're so alone, you know?
But, it's one of the most hurtful things to look back on in my adolescence and know that he was so pervasive in the culture.
God.
And he got away with so much blatant, violent homophobia.
And also, the cover of his album was his dead wife's body in his trunk.
And I bought the Eminem Show album.
Me too.
I bought it because I felt, as a young person, this is what I'm supposed to be listening to. And if I don't have this Eminem album, it was the same reason why I lied about my favorite band being Limp Bizkit when I was asked. Because I couldn't say
so
Christina Aguilera because that would mean I was gay. So again, in a way of, like, you know, holding myself back and making myself into what everyone else was, I bought that Eminem Show album. If you look through the cover art of that album, it's him killing his audience.
Yeah.
He murders his audience.
Yeah. I think is that the one with the curtains on the front?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I had too. And I also bought it because I was like, I will make myself like this, right? Like, I don't want to say I like Britney Spears. I don't want to say I like the Bodyguard soundtrack. I don't want to say I like all of these things, like hiding this part of yourself. And the reason I brought this up is that all of these people who send me this hate, they look like young M&Ms.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
My God. Ugh.
And it's... I feel, and I'm not being altruistic here, I feel so bad for what we do to teenage boys.
Yeah.
You know? And this is an alt way of looking at it, or alternative.
Sure,
I don't want
sure,
to
sure.
say that word anymore.
You were halfway to that. Yeah.
This is an alternative way to look at it, but, like, there is a real privilege of queerness because you get to see the world. You're, like, thrust to the outer reaches of the world, and then you get this better perspective on the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by queerness, I don't just mean queerness. I mean any kind of minority status
sure.
that
otherness,
makes you...
Yeah.
Any otherness,
yeah,
right.
Get this, like, really amazing perspective of the world. But I feel bad for them because from that vantage point, you're starting to see what the machine does to these people,
mm-hmm.
right? And... I mean, this is not to say that I'm going to respond to them and start a dialogue, because if I'm getting, you know, however many messages a day I get, like, that's not worth my energy. My energy is not going to be spent having a meaningful conversation with these people.
Right.
But it is the public-private dynamic of, these are things that you would never, ever say to my face.
Never.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, you said something to me when we were talking about this, that you were like, what I want to do is just sit them down and be like, do you really want me to die?
Yeah.
Is that how you truly...
Or you want to do that, like, I want to do that, like, Marina Abramovic piece.
Oh, sure.
Where it's like, here's a gun,
thing.
And here's a knife. And it's like, do you want to do this to me, or do you want to do something else, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of insane. I also think that this is just a time when the way you release things on the internet is you're releasing it to a platform where people can truly say anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you think back to television in like the 90s,
yeah.
like if an episode came out and a gay couple kissed on it, right? Yeah. Like it's a much longer process. You don't comment on that.
Yeah.
You comment on it. If you are so incensed, you take it upon yourself to write a letter and then you put a stamp on that letter that you spent money on. And
yeah.
then you put that envelope in the mail and then the mail goes to the like channel that broadcasted it.
Right,
and then
right.
there's a mail center. So it's like,
there were so many, filters.
Yeah. There were so many filters.
Yeah. Can I, okay. So you just talking about sort of, and both of you talking about sequestering away this like, these like interests as kids. Can I just, this, I haven't done this before on the show. Okay. Ham Sandwich. She used to be a drag queen. Now she's transitioning. She's trans. During National Coming Out Day this week, she wrote this really, I thought this beautifully written thing about the closet. Can I read it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. The closet is a stupid phrase. It's a cutesy hetero-friendly euphemism for what is actually solitary confinement in a prison of pure fear, the walls of which appear out of nowhere after you've spent some chunk of your life thinking you were roaming free like everybody else. There is a key placed within reach, but that key is made of a kind of courage no one in straight culture ever said you need to have, because the walls themselves are built out of a cowardice that straight people have never had to confront.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think speaks to like yeah. these people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just one more thing. Every LGBT person has escaped their cell through sheer force of will. And on their own, we've all taken an irreversible and costly step. And often the only reward we get for it is the company and solidarity of others who have taken that same step. That's why I'm more proud on this day than that fucking stupid week in June. And then she ends it with, she says, she talks about how she'd come out twice, once as gay and then once as trans. And then she says, all LGBT people, even the ones whose guts I fucking hate, are beautiful for this reason. So
yeah.
I think that was... Anyway. So I think
that's
just
true. It's something,
all of
and
it.
It's so interesting because, you know, now whenever I meet somebody LGBT, it's like, you feel an instant familiarity and love for that person because it's true. No one else does know. You
know.
Really don't know.
Well, that's what it is. It's like, and that's what that the thing I responded most to in Ham's writing was that like she's saying like you're escaping out of your own will. Like that's
mm-hmm.
God. Like what a crazy like lonely thing.
I mean, I also think like within the LGBTQIA community,
mm-hmm.
there's like. A strong amount of mask privilege and a strong amount of white privilege.
100%.
Yes, 100%. Of course.
But which is present, for the record, in every minority community.
Yes.
And I was talking about this with someone, but it's like, I was talking about this with my friend. She's an actor and she's currently filming a show. And it came up because she's wearing contacts for the show. She's a black woman.
Uh-huh.
And she was telling me that everyone would come up to her and be like, oh, your eyes are so beautiful. And it's like that light privilege of like, and so we were talking about, is it, it's this thing present in all minority communities of
yeah.
like who is closest to white and who is closest to male,
mm-hmm.
you know? And who's closest to like straight acting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was talking to, there's this really great guy, Representative Brian Sims.
Yes,
oh,
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I love that.
He's amazing.
He's great. He seems tremendous. Like such a cool guy.
He's so smart. Mm-hmm. And the way, so he's this very mask presenting gay white guy.
Mm-hmm. State senator in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, state legislator. In Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And
daddy.
He's
a daddy.
Okay. All
right. No comment.
Little light humor.
And
propagating masculinity.
But he was saying that he understands that the opponent of his community
mm-hmm.
looks like him.
Mm-hmm.
And the opponent of minority communities looks just like him. So they're more serious. They're going to take him more seriously because he looks like them.
Ugh.
So he's like, I'm willing to fight for all of these people because I know this awful thing is true, that they take me more seriously just because for so many people being gay is just a fact, right? Right, like they're just like I think of like Neil Patrick Harris. Would I consider him a queer? No. Would I like, but it's like, is that my person there?
No.
Is that my avatar? No.
No.
But,
for a long time, though, that was it.
I mean, did you feel that?
For me, I felt like that.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, that was it. For me, when I was in high school, when I found out that he was gay and openly gay and playing a role that was straight on television and accepted as part of the mainstream culture on a network like CBS, which I even knew at that age was bullshit, like, because it is, I was like, wow, this is my hero. And I remember I felt like a genuine crush on him and a genuine like love for him and like sort of like an obsession. Like I remember I would go home and I would Google him and
see for
you know listen to and find out the project that he was involved with. And I also found out that he was involved in this like concert version of Sweeney Todd that he did with Patti LuPone, and I was like, wow, this person has so many varied interests, but like they're able to succeed on a mainstream level and they're gay and they're out and saying it, like it's crazy. Oh my God. And this is like pre Sean Hayes saying he was gay. And like, sure, I mean like Ellen being out like meant something, but to be honest with you, like I guess like in Neil Patrick Harris is the first time I saw myself, which is my own privilege.
No. I mean, I think that is great and important, and I don't mean to knock him. I mean to just say it's an echo of what you're saying, which is like it's so fucked up that that's like one of the only ones
and we have to like in some cases pretend to identify with
him. Right. And we're like and I'm, you know, yeah, I mean, that's it's the what I wanted to knock was the culture that made him be the only one.
Right.
Not
right.
him.
No. Like, and you know what? Because even he, I'm sure, like, isn't fully out as himself. Like, you know what I mean?
I think this is what Dylan's saying, is that he was able to still, like, sustain his own career because he just had all the other like points in the checklist that were like,
let's 100% acknowledge that he was completely straight acting.
Right.
And playing an extremely like almost vulgar straight
and
role
so there,
on television.
There was that like element of like, ooh, he, you know, like there's the like magic element.
But what he's passing. Right. Mm-hmm.
And his thing for a while was his like type was disgusting straight man.
Right.
Like, not even in How I Met Your Mother, but also in Harold and Kumar.
I wonder how that is going to stand the test of history. Like, I wonder
Harold
how... No, I wonder how his performance in How I Met Your Mother is going to
I don't know.
Read decades from now, especially after this election.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
How are you guys doing in this election?
Doing okay. I went canvassing last weekend.
And you guys were phone banking.
And I've been phone banking.
How was that?
It's interesting.
I was calling members of the Democratic Party in Michigan to make sure that they got their absentee ballots. So it wasn't like I was calling undecided voters in Florida. I wasn't like confronting that head on. I got a couple of responses that were like, it's none of your business who I vote for. Or
it's between me and my God.
It's between me and my God was one. And also... can we count on you to support Hillary on November 8th? Like, hell you can. And these are, like, Democrats.
It's
registered Democrats that are in the system for that reason. I would say, how am I doing with it? I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking tired that now I'm just desperately trying to see the humor in it.
Yeah.
Because I do think that it's... I think he can't come back from this.
Yeah.
I'm still fighting. Like, I still will go in the phone bank and I still will, you know... do all I can, but I'm really beat down by it. And I'm also missing the kind of social media that took itself less seriously, to be honest. I really am. I'm seeing now, like, I'm respecting people a lot less, which I really didn't wish I had to. Family members of mine that come out and say these certain things where I'm like, wow, I'm never going to forget this now. it's a new kind of era where it's like you're really finding out what people really think, and it's scary mm-hmm. because you don't have the commonality that you thought you had with everybody, and it is scary, and it's making me really tired, and also I haven't been sleeping as well, and I think this is why.
Because of it?
Yeah.
I also think it's like ludicrous that people are trying to talk about this election with impartiality.
Oh my God.
It's insane.
I saw this Jeep commercial before the movie I just went to.
Uh-huh.
And this Jeep commercial, you know when it's like a commercial that plays before a movie, so you know it's like the extended cut fancy version?
Right.
So it was like, basically, no matter who you are, Jeep is for all Americans. Mm-hmm. And it was shots of bumper stickers that support different ideologies, but never something so political like
abortion,
Black Lives Matter, or abortion. It was like, I support our troops, save the earth.
The most innocuous
right
bullshit. Yeah.
And
not
then
bullshit,
one so then it was a split screen at the very end, and half of the car closed, and it was a blue car, and the bumper sticker was Democrat, and half of the car was red, and it was a bumper sticker, and it was Republican. I think what is going to happen is, like, first of all,
is everyone will get a Jeep.
Everyone, first of all, let's go get it. This is sponsored by Jeep. Yeah. thanks to Jeep. You know, when on podcasts, they always say, like, our friends at Jeep. And
our
it's like,
who?
Woof, what friends?
Who are you talking
to
at Jeep? But Dylan, that reminds me, Squarespace.
Squarespace. What is it? A snack box.
Yeah, whatever.
Are you ever craving a snack? Yes, all the time.
Why, yeah.
Spend $70 a week. Anyway, I just wanted to say that it is, like, what are those now iconic red hats that say Make America Great Again?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that going to, is no candidate in the future of American politics ever going to have a red hat again as part of their campaign? Because it's so iconic, you know?
Right.
Like,
I think it goes away.
I think what we're living through is so different.
Well, you know? Think about this, though. I mean,
he's doing right now is he's trying. I think he knows he's kind of flailing a little bit. He knows he can't win
a little bit.
So he's trying to do as much lasting damage as possible.
Yeah, he's trying to ruin her life.
Yeah,
I mean, that's clear. Like, mm-hmm. and I think he's ruining a lot of people's lives. I mean, now these women are, whether they really wanted to or not, are all kind of forced to come forward. We all know that coming forward about your assault is, like, very personal and very difficult. But now I think that women that might have told their family members or told their friends in the past that this happened to them, now that this is happening with Donald Trump, I'm sure they're being pressured.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today they're just an hour before we started, I saw there's an Apprentice contestant from season 5 that came forward with Gloria Allred and on camera gave a statement about her sexual assault, a detailed 11-minute taped confession about a sexual assault that she endured at the hands of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And this is not stopping because you know that there's countless women.
Yeah.
What scares me is the fact that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to people.
Right.
Like the Daily Show just did a segment about these people being like, he wants to grab women by the pussy. I want to grab women by the pussy. Yeah. I wish I could grab as much pussy as
Donald
Trump.
Or the women who are like, I'm 65 and I would love if someone would grab my pussy. It means I'm cute. And I'm like,
So basically what you're saying is you consent.
Right.
So you consent.
So fine. But still, no, this is what Dylan's saying is that the impartiality is completely null and void because it's like when Seamless does the put in I'm with her or I'm with him for 5% off.
Aren't you longing for the days of John McCain and Sarah Palin?
Or
Mitt Romney. It's just like they're so different.
Ugh. I think, I mean,
were you talking about this Game Change moment?
Yes. Okay, so I watched the movie Game Change 2 nights ago because I figured this would be fascinating to watch now. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Palin, I believe, was the beginning of this. Real beginning of this is when Reagan, the first thing he did in office was cut education.
Yeah.
Because then that's what
and
that's
declare
how you got a
war on drugs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's how you got a big dumb electorate that you could control. Uh-huh. So that's why we have what we have today. But in terms of this beginning of the Tea Party, in terms of this people being proud of the fact they were uneducated and you know, left behind, That started with Sarah Palin. Because they saw in themselves, they saw themselves in her. A charismatic, every woman who was up there on a national stage, and she spoke to them. And what she said to everybody was like, look,
I'm not an insider.
I'm not an insider. And that was what they had to do with her because she truly didn't know anything.
That was the first time in American politics that like inexperience was a was virtuous.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow. So there's someone up there that can get up there who is really, truly like me. Meanwhile, what no one considers is the fact that she shouldn't have fucking been up there in the first place. Yeah. She was being used as a tactic to win. Like,
to pull in, like, disenchanted.
It's just
Hillary
funny, this mentality of, like, he says what I think. Well, you shouldn't be president.
Right. Like, right.
Yeah.
And it started with Sarah Palin because she did give birth to the Tea Party in one of the last scenes of Game Change, which is a movie that's been, you know, spoken on by people like Nicole Wallace and Steve Schmidt, who are depicted in the movie as being, quote, like, so accurate that it gave them chills. Like, this is Nicole,
so what was
Nicole
the
Wallace's.
Scene?
The last scene is Sarah Palin, as played by Julianne Moore, is determined to make a concession speech alongside John McCain.
Yeah.
She's like, I got quite a speech I'm going to make next to you. And he's like, no, that's not appropriate. I'm going to make the speech. You'll stand up there with me and that'll be fine. And he turns around and walks away. And she's still there and she's dejected. And before he gets out the door, he turns around and walks back to her and says, you're one of the leaders of the party now, Sarah. And people are going to be looking to you for what to do. Don't get corrupted by Limbaugh and the rest of the crazy people because it's not real.
Well, too bad because that's fucking John McCain's fault too for even picking
this. Oh, it's fully...
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. John McCain, as presented in the movie, is like a very noble person.
Sure, right. Sure.
But unfortunately, the politics of it all and the needing to win got to him. And it was really his advisors that were like, you cannot win this election with Joe Lieberman, which was who he wanted to choose.
Right,
he wanted it to be a split ticket with a Democratic vice presidential choice. And they were like, this is not going to help you because what we need to do statistically is reinvigorate the base and also win back some independents. So you need somebody that's going to excite everyone because they hold a gun and also get them excited because you're involving someone else. Like, the gender gap is very wide. We need to close it. And they went through all the, I guess, female possibilities and chose the most quote-unquote charismatic choice. And it was Sarah Palin. And there you have someone who just did not know anything. It wasn't that she was too dumb to know it. Mm-hmm. It was that she didn't know it. And the volume of information that she had to take on was just too much for any person. And she had a breakdown.
So funny, though, because you watch old... Because, like, even like Gawker did a thing on this way back in the day. Like, they posted the gubernatorial debates from when she was running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able, and like she's asked a question on abortion, and she was able to very skillfully dodge that question and going, but you know what? Like, of course there are cases where that would be the only option, the only viable option, but in most cases I would choose life. But like she's saying that, and obviously you don't agree with it. Like, people don't agree with that, but she said it in a way that was actually like,
right. She was on her own turf.
She was on her turf, and she was like, she knew what she wasn't in over her head, and it was like, oh, she's probably a perfectly fine politician at the state level,
right?
But then like you just like shoot her up. You gave her this meteoric rise.
And
just
to make this a little more macro and human, I always wonder about that is that part of the human condition, right? Like,
what is
well, I just think like I would like to believe that we are humans who have our convictions and we have our ethical ground to stand on. But I also think like it has so much to do with circumstance and like what you believe. And it's like, can power and fame turn you into a monster?
I think Game Change and the story of Sarah Palin would argue that it can.
Yeah. And Donald Trump even.
Trump as well.
Fully.
I mean, on a much more relevant and grand scale, yeah.
So is that a human failing?
Well, I just mean to understand these people as humans, right? Like, if you want to even humanize, like, it's like that chapter in The Bluest Eye when Toni Morrison humanizes this character who is the most vile and despicable character of the whole book, and you didn't think it was possible. It's mm-hmm. like, are we, you know, maybe like we'll ultimately get that chapter for Donald Trump.
Everyone has a story.
Everyone has a story. But I just think that, like, that is like something to consider, like we were talking about with internet trolls and internet harassment. Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, there were things that led to this moment. Mm-hmm. And what if, like, we went back to you as a kid? Like, we'd like to think everyone was Damien, you know, from The Omen. But it's like, it's not. We love thinking that. I mean, this is not a new idea. It's uh-huh. like, it's like, you know, the banality of evil, right? Like, yeah. why did so many people join the Nazi party? It's not like they were all Damians,
right?
You
right,
know,
right.
But it's like, how easy is it to just join this, like,
and be swept
evil,
up in,
yeah,
the,
yeah, in true horrendous
evil?
Yeah. So I don't know.
It's. I mean, I do think that this movie, I mean, if no one has seen Game Change, I would recommend people see it. It really pretty much, because you like her in the beginning. Like, it's interesting. You know what will happen, and so mm-hmm. you're questioning it. And of course, but what I think is so great about this movie is Julianne Moore is such an amazing actress. She plays her, and you really feel the frustration. You feel her trying to answer these questions, but she just can't. She just doesn't have the capability to take on and memorize all these things. And for what amount of the things that she was supposed to know, she did a pretty good job. I mean, she made it through that vice presidential debate, like, sure, sure. which was insane, like that she was able to do that from knowing nothing. But what happens to that character, I think her tragic flaw was, like, she fucking loved the attention. And so she saw that she got the attention.
And
because
who wouldn't?
They say in the beginning of the movie, they sit her down to vet her. And they're like, the biggest concern we have is that you're a creationist. And she says, my father was a science teacher. You know, I grew up and I accept evolution. I understand evolution. I saw fossils when I was young. Like, I get it. But I just can't deny that I see God's hand in everything that we have. And I believe that God created all this. And they're like, okay, so we have someone that understands it, but, like, you know, for spiritual reasons wants to believe this other thing. But then, like, that wasn't the public persona that she gave.
Right.
She gave the true fundamental thing.
Yeah.
And that is not necessarily truthful to what she apparently believed, but it was on a mass level what was going to get her the best attention and the best, you know, the most followers.
There's this author, Baratunde Thurston.
I love Baratunde.
Yeah. And he...
How to Be Black?
How to Be Black. And he has one chapter. It's like, if you want to be famous quickly, be a black conservative talking head. And it's so true. Like, like, if you want to be known, say the right thing that will make you exceptional, you know?
That's so funny.
So that reminded me of that part of...
Game Change.
Yeah, you wonder, like, how much of this shit that Stacey Dash has does she believe? Or, like,
I don't know.
Or, like, honestly, is she just like,
Was that a job?
That's a job offer.
Honestly, it may have been a job.
Yeah, you never know.
Because it was just funny, because So when I was in 2008, when I was in college, the way I got my news was The View.
Oh.
I would have my classes from 8 to 10:45, and I would get home, and I would run home to see what my girls to see what my girls were saying.
I love The View.
I love The View, but now it's so sad.
I haven't watched it recently.
It's so sad, Dylan. Because Whoopi's still there, but Whoopi's so checked out. and like, it's not really what it was, because I can't. I just don't know who these women are anymore.
Yeah.
Like back in 2008, it was like you had Elizabeth Hasselbeck. God love her. You know what I mean? But she represented what she wanted to represent and what she needed to represent.
Where
really
is she now?
Well, she works.
Is she on Fox and Friends now?
She was on Fox and Friends, but then I think she kind of quit to go do family stuff.
Okay.
So I think that's where she is now. But she, as much as frustrating as she was so important. And they had Nicole Wallace on the show.
But Nicole Wallace is like,
ugh. No, I like Nicole Wallace. No, I
watch her on
smart.
MSNBC now, and like she's a good presence to have. But like, I'm like, stop talking.
I don't know. I don't think
when
that
you have,
about
when you have her
sitting
next to Rachel Maddow, I'm like, I don't want to listen to you. I want to listen to this lesbian
because,
genius.
Yeah, but is that because your political views align more with Rachel
Absolutely.
Maddow?
Absolutely. And I don't want to hear fucking Nicole Wallace weigh in on how Hillary sounded shrill.
I don't
Sorry.
Think Nicole Wallace is saying that.
No, she actually said that.
She said that Hillary...
Not shrill, but she was like, yeah, but Hillary came off a little too... Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all right, Nicole. Just during the post-debate coverage. Anyway. Okay, well, the point is, early days, like, 08 era view, you had Sherry saying the world was flat. You
yeah,
had...
for sure. But that was why you wanted to watch it. I mean, you had your entertainment value, and also you had, yeah. like, the fact that Real News was coming in.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because... Everyone took The View so
Even
seriously.
Even Rosie on The View. Oh, loved it.
Rosie.
Come on.
Firecracker.
Firecracker. The Even that. I went back and watched the first videos where she like starts going in on Trump, and I'm like, oh, she's so good.
But yeah. You know what, though? How right was she?
She was absolutely... She nailed
she
it.
She was
it is
dead
so
on.
Funny to me that he is obsessed
it's
with
so
Rosie
funny.
O'Donnell. He's obsessed with her.
You choose to bring her up on the first and most watched debate
in history.
And now it's the most watched debate in history. And you're like, okay, you're choosing to die on this hill. Sorry, Donald. You're going to bring up Donald. You're going to bring up fucking Rosie O'Donnell.
It's insane.
So funny.
It's nuts.
Okay, well, we didn't ask you how you were doing with this election. How are you doing?
He's got to remain professional, honey.
Are you? Yes. You know what? And
he's got to keep his head above water.
We don't have to talk too much about work. We don't have to talk too much about the election. Whatever.
No,
you want
I
to do.
I feel. I mean, it's a fascinating time to like. Feel like this is like, let's get to know America. You know, like this is the segment of the long running news magazine show.
America.
That is, well, let's sit down and really get to know America.
Are you surprised by what you're hearing?
No.
Yeah, neither am
but
I.
But we are, it feels like we're dredging up the bottom dwellers.
It's all coming out. It's yeah. like, this is the end of a corporate retreat when everyone's like, I think he's an asshole. And then yeah. everyone's like, yeah, yeah. And it's like, we're about to leave in an hour.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. That is so good.
Yeah. It's well, it feels like that, but it's, you're getting to know everyone. I
yeah.
mean, you're getting to know.
You get a direct line to everybody.
And now, I mean, we say this every election. Social media has never been like this
in any
election before.
Yes.
And I, the like thing cultured thing to do is to be like, oh, social media ruining our society. Let's go back to books, you know? And it's like, fuck you. Like, being on social media doesn't prohibit you from reading books.
No.
Doesn't prohibit you from like taking part in the legacy of culture.
Right, right.
This is part of culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to put this blanket statement out and say like, well, social media is ruining the world. It's like, no, it's not. No, it's a medium to speak. You might not like what you're seeing, but social media, I believe, is like, first of all, I have a career because of the internet.
Right.
I've been told so many times, like, I'm not right for, my face isn't right for this kind of experience. And then the internet, which is much more democratic, just shows that people actually don't care.
They don't
you know,
care.
What
right.
executives tell you in a boardroom meeting is not actually what people want to yep. see. It's what they want to
mm-hmm.
see.
Mm-hmm.
So you bypass that. And then...
oh, God, the amount of times we've been told... I'm sure all three of us that we're too niche.
Yeah.
We were
too specific.
We were recently told niche.
And we're like, okay, thank you.
I'm so... how much can you share that is comfortable? I just want to hear more.
I mean,
more.
It was a very gay show. Fun. Like, Matt wrote the script years ago, and we read it again a couple months ago when we were trying to punch this up. It still holds up. And we were like, you know what? Let's pitch this.
We were so excited about
it. Pitch this to a place. And then development folks were like, you know what?
Too niche.
Too niche.
Too niche.
And we're like, thank you so much. We'll take this elsewhere.
I know what niche means.
Anywhere. Yeah. We know. We all know. Yeah. So then you're... Okay. So...
I just mean to say that the internet has provided this fascinating cyber ground for people to express their opinions and for people to also explore new... thoughts and for people to follow threads where
it's
they're
the
like
agora.
Agora
like an old like Greek or Roman towns like, it would just be mm-hmm. the town square where everyone would just go and
totally
just talk.
Yeah. And now there is a much bigger town square and it's so amazing that we can communicate with people who on platforms that are built for that. You know, it's not just like this room where people are shouting.
No.
It's like, I mean, but then like, what are the algorithms?
Right,
you know, like
right.
We don't know that.
Yeah.
Something like Twitter is a more real algorithm. And then the last thing I'll say is that when people shit on hashtag activism, it's like shitting on poster boards. You know, it's like, it's like being like, well, fuck poster board signs. And it's like, what?
Well, how else are you going to get the message out?
Yeah, it's just a way to say the message.
Right.
And a hashtag is a great, like, filing system for the world. You know, you're just like, I'll click on this and I'll see what people are saying.
Yep.
So that's just this, like, it's like the most juvenile thing. Like when people gang up on the Kardashians because they have like nothing else to say about like critiquing pop culture. It's like,
no, actually they're brilliant.
Right? Like they are artists and they will be considered artists one day for what they have, how they have manipulated.
And
systems.
We'll be pronouncing the name Kardashian.
Kardashian. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the show. I just mean,
yes, you are.
I just mean criticizing them by default.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I know, of course.
And then criticizing hashtag activism because you hear people that you respect criticizing hashtag activism. Mm.
I have to shout out a genius comedic moment I saw one time in reference to the Kardashians. It was Molly Kahn and Arielle Carlin's show, Eggs for Sale,
Eggs for Sale
at UCB. And it was this sketch where Molly goes, they're reading their like tabloids, and she goes, ugh, the Kardashians, like, I don't even pay attention to them. What is it? Keeping Up with the Kardashians, is that the name of the show? I don't even know. And Ariel goes, yeah, that's the name of the show.
Wasn't there a...
And then the whole sketch is like, Kim Kardashian, why is she even famous? And Ariel goes, well, I'll tell you, and proceeds to give a PowerPoint presentation on why Kim Kardashian is famous.
My God.
And it's like, Kim Kardashian is an entrepreneur. Kim Kardashian is a reality show personality.
Yeah.
This is why she is famous. And also, why is anyone famous?
Yeah, right.
I feel like asking the question, why are the Kardashians famous, is, if you really think about it, one of the dumbest questions you can ever ask.
They've really, that whole family has like just drilled to the core of what fame is, and they hacked it, and they should be praised for it. Anyway, that's
it's like,
how I feel about it.
We know why they're famous. Ask why someone else is famous.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, we fully know why the Kardashians are famous. I do want to say, before I said I wish social media didn't take itself so seriously, I think what I'm upset about is Facebook. Because this is what I don't like about Facebook lately. It's all the different kinds of emotions that you can visibly see people having to everything.
Yeah.
It just feels very like, yeah, get inflamed. Mm. It's like, you have to remember that Facebook is like leeching off of us. I feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, well, that's, to me, it feels like a, not even just like a encouragement of our emotions. It feels like a manipulation and like a, you know.
I think it just sets the tenor for the conversations to be had, which I think is actually useful.
Well, I guess just like, I don't know.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that it's a, we don't know the system behind it, right? Because we don't understand or control the algorithms, something like Twitter is a radically different platform. Twitter is a...
just completely chronological.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No.
I'll always have a problem with people that are like, I see what you're posting, and what you really should be posting is this.
Oh, totally.
I'll just always have a problem with that. And it's like,
you have a problem with people. You've said this before. People policing.
Just don't be be the police, like, on social media.
This is an honest question that I don't necessarily have an answer for, but do you think there is like honest discourse that can, or useful discourse that can come out of Facebook?
It depends on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My answer is yeah. I've had,
you've learned from Facebook.
I've learned from talking to people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like, honestly, we've all become better because of it and been like at the end, wow, this was a great conversation. I think we've all changed.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for example, I mean, I posted Michelle Obama's speech at the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
And I had like a teacher from high school comment on it that was like, I'm sorry, but she's wrong. and this, and then posted like a graphic from like a obviously like very slanted conservative like website. Yeah, something like that.
InfoWars.
And it started a full blown battle.
Yeah.
And what it kind of revealed to me was like how defensive people on that side will get,
because
it's like, because they have a lot of
being threatened,
because that's what it is. So right now the Republicans and like anybody that is supporting Trump right now, they're doing so because they're angry. And they're doing so because they feel like they're not being heard and they're not being listened to and they're not being cared about. And so when something happens, like this guy posts on my wall his opinion, and then everyone jumps on board and it's, you're dumb. That is why he's like this in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's something I've learned from this, is it's like, I've observed the kind of piranha mentality of Facebook. And
piranha mentality.
It's kind of like, and you see someone say something and then it's like, yeah, they're right. I'm going to like their post. And it was like, it was interesting because like I would make a comment and it would get 30 likes and his would get none. And I was like, wow. And a little part of me in the back of my head was like, yeah, we're winning. And I was like, you're being the piranha right now. You just want that like. You just want, and it's not that you don't believe what you're saying, but it becomes a situation where it's not a fair fight because you're on my feed. And you know what I mean? We're not actually getting the conversation right now because we're on my feed and we're on my home turf. It's like when you go to Fenway Park and you're the one Yankee fan. You know,
right.
Odds are you're going to get a comment. So like,
that's such a good point.
And, you know, and so basically, like, when it comes to Facebook and when it comes to the whole bit, it's like there's a lot to be learned in the way that we communicate with each other. And there's a lot to be learned in, like, how to better get these things across. And, like, but really, like, if you expect to have a totally honest discourse, balanced discourse on Facebook, you're not going to get that because you have the potential for people to side with you without even saying anything. So it's difficult, and it is by nature slanted, and I think that helps Facebook because it gets people excited.
I think I appreciate Facebook a lot for, like, you know, when Evita came out, also big moment that
huge
I got
moment.
Into culture.
Huge.
Come on, Evita.
Come on, Perone.
It's Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. The truth is, I never left you.
The balcony.
All through my wild days.
Okay. My mad existence. So, I kept my promise, bitch.
Don't keep your distance. Okay, I'm sorry, Dylan, go.
Have I said too much? there's nothing more I can think of to say to you. Anyway, the
you
image
must
of
love me.
You guys, no. Get out of the rabbit hole.
Okay. So you know how she comes out onto the, like,
the balcony.
Terrace. That is when I see Facebook being most successful, is that now everyone has a balcony.
Ah.
So not like what you're saying, Matt, about the comments, I totally agree with. Like, I really owned him, you know, like I eviscerated him, all caps. But it's more, it's like, I do think that when people come out and they're like, this is a speech I had planned and I'm going to share it, I see such value in that. Like, in the last week with women sharing their sexual assault story, I'm not interested in the conversation that has come, like anyone arguing with them about it. But I love that I get to listen to it on a platform that then I can scroll to the next one. And if there's a hashtag, I love that I can click on that hashtag and then I can read other women dealing with these stories, you know? And
because how else are you going to get those stories?
Right.
Do you ever feel concerned, though, that because we're all becoming more accustomed to typing these out, that we can't actually articulate them human to human?
I mean, we're doing that right now. I don't know.
I think there is, even if, like, I'm having a day where I, like, spend it all on the computer, I have an adjustment period where it's, like, gotta talk to a human right now.
Right,
like, a bit of a, like, getting my sea legs back. Like, you know when you're ice skating and you, like, forget how to walk for, like, a second?
No, I'm a perfect ice skater.
You're Tara Lipinski.
Tara.
Yeah, I knew.
Who I am is Tanya Harding.
And I'm Nancy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
And don't you ever forget it, bitch.
Why?
I'll come at you with my sticks.
This Celex, that adjustment period is so. It's, that applies to anything because anytime I go back to China and I'm using Mandarin, as soon as I get back on the return flight and I'm talking to an English speaker, I'll be like, oh, so sorry. And then that's going to be like my first full phrase of English that I've spoken in weeks. And I'm like, whoa, what's English? So yeah, that's interesting.
Wow, you won't speak English for 2 weeks.
Well, you know what? I'm worried and I've talked about this. The language barrier is getting bigger and bigger the older I get, and I have less of an excuse for it. Because, like, growing up, like, my Mandarin proficiency would track with my age and be like, oh, you're a kid. Of course you only know kid words. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm an adult, it's like
pizza.
pasta, lasagna. And then, now that I'm this mature,
beautiful young man.
Beautiful man. This is just the culture in China, I guess. Culture is that, like, they'll just point out, like, oh, you're Chinese. Like, my relatives are absolutely 100% going to be like, well, your Mandarin's gotten much worse.
And
they'll say that without, like, being malicious. They're just, like, making an observation. They're like, wow, your Mandarin is terrible. And I'm going to take that. I'm really gonna let that affect me. And I mean,
don't
like, fuck. Wow, God, it really does suck, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, Bowen, because you don't live there.
I know, but I think they are sort of they feel owed the, the conversation. So I'm gonna, like, they're gonna ask me about the election. I've listened. I've translated my answers over. It's so funny.
What do you think their perspective will be on this election? It's so interesting to go somewhere else in the world and listen to people.
Yeah. No, but you know what it is? Like, and people say this, but, like, the rest of the world really does. Like, Bradford Jordan was tweeting. He's in Hong Kong right now, but he was tweeting about how, the morning after the debate, like, these kids were huddled around a phone watching the entire debate. And being like, I can't believe this is what's happening in America.
Yeah. So, same thing was happening in Europe too.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go back to China and they're gonna ask me, like, why we don't understand how he got there. And I'm gonna be like, yeah, well, here's what I think. Yeah. And, like, I have to articulate these very complex
things. Let's end this conversation with that question. Dylan, how did Donald Trump get here?
I mean he got here through television.
Yeah.
He got here through television, and I grew up on a block where he built one of his skyscrapers.
Wow.
So he blocked our river views. So, like,
What city?
Here.
Oh,
yeah. So I grew up, I always structurally knew of him as this guy who blocked our river views. And that's a sense, like,
yeah, we were living very poetic.
We were living in a rent stabilized building. Uh-huh. And there was a plaza across the street from us, and it was always under construction. And then he came in and he whipped it up into shape, and he, like, made it be a park. And you're like, at what cost? You always had that question, like, what are we paying for here? And then he erected this skyscraper. Called it the tallest skyscraper in the world on the side. That was the record that he was going for. Tallest skyscraper in the world. And it said, like, 90 plus stories. And then you learned they were counting the lobby as, like, 20. And so it's like,
it says everything.
It's all
he needed to have the biggest vertical structure in the world. I always say this about the World Trade Center. America's dick.
Yeah. I mean, it's this, like, I do think this is America's need for size.
Ugh.
America's obsession with size is going to kill us, because, like, I mean, in this very direct way with climate change, like, everything needs to be as big as possible. And then you go to Europe and you're like, I'll have ice, please. And they're like, no, we don't have that. And you're like, what? Really? I want this heaping with ice.
I want a big cup of fluid.
Bowen, how did Donald Trump get here?
I think we were talking about this with Game Change, like, off the air, I think, like, this week. I think it's that. It's like, let's go backwards. Trump, Tea Party, Sarah Palin, Reagan. There you go. Hubert Humphrey.
My opinion is I think that everyone's really confused in America right now between celebrity and real. I think it's become one. I think everyone's just really fucked up.
Yeah.
Qualification in celebrity.
I think people genuinely take a lot of these celebrities who really shouldn't be taken seriously, and I think that's what that is. I think
that's so right.
And you know
Scotty
what?
Nell Hughes, who the hell is she?
I have to say,
sorry.
He's crafted his own image. That's
oh yeah.
He's curated what
and that
images
is
people see of him.
And that is a skill.
Yeah.
I think that it's time. It's time for I Don't Think So, Honey.
I Don't Think So, Honey.
Now, Dylan, I don't know if you're familiar, but I Don't Think So, Honey is
the centerpiece.
It's what people
tune in for.
It's what they live for. They listen to Les Coteristas. They sit through an hour and 22, 23 minutes of a podcast and they say, God damn it. That's right. I haven't even gotten to the best part, which is I Don't Think So, Honey.
I Don't Think So, Honey.
And it's about to happen. We have 60 seconds to rail against something in culture that's bothering us on a deep, deep level. Do you have something that you'd like to talk about tonight, Bowen?
I have a vague...
We give you the courtesy of going last, Dylan.
I know what I'm going to talk about.
Okay,
you
great.
Do.
But let's, in keeping with tradition...
You want to go first or should I?
Can you go first? Because I have only the vague formations of an idea.
I have something, and I really don't know how I'm going to talk about this, but I'm about to.
Okay, here we go. Matt Rogers, I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts 1 minute. Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Taylor Swift, where is your Hillary Clinton endorsement? I swear to God, Taylor Swift, I Don't Think So, Honey. How come every other pop star and every other notable celebrity can give their fucking endorsement? You are so transparent. Taylor Swift, I Don't Think So, Honey. I am never paying to see you in concert again. I will rip your fucking albums off the internet. I will make sure you never get another cent from me unless you come out and support Hillary Clinton in this election. I think it's fucking ridiculous and cowardly. You put your own image over the betterment of this nation, and it's so stupid. You saying I'm this close to overexposure to Kanye West is not an excuse for you to not come out and do the right thing right now. I'm talking every other celebrity, people with just as much to lose as you. You're still gonna have fans if you come out and say the right thing. Seriously, if Beyonce can do it, if everyone else can do it, why can't you? Your voice is gonna make a difference, and I know you know right from wrong. Please, I Don't Think So, Honey. Any excuse you might have, Taylor Swift, endorse Hillary Clinton. I Don't Think So, Honey, if you don't.
That's 1 minute. Wow, Matt, thank you. Okay, all right.
I'm so mad that she hasn't said something.
You're 100% right. She
has so much influence.
She can fucking take a shit at the St. Peter's Basilica and still have all her fans.
And that's why I'm saying, like, it matters. Like, the celebrity bullshit is why Donald Trump is up there. It matters what Taylor Swift fucking says. Like, it's so stupid, but you know it matters. So why doesn't she just say something?
Absolutely.
She's been dead silent about this whole thing.
Okay.
She doesn't care about the country fans anymore. Or we're supposed to believe. I don't know. It's so stupid and transparent. I hate her.
I agree. Okay. All right. You got it out. You're good. This is the point, baby. Okay.
I'm truly distressed.
All right, I'm ready for something. You want to give me time?
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and it starts right now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, people who are still afraid of Chipotle. I've been going I went the week that the E. coli broke out, and I still enjoyed a delicious burrito bowl with smoked Tabasco, honey. I got my life with white rice, black beans, chicken, and now they have chorizo. What's not to love? Get your ass to Chipotle. I Don't Think So, Honey, people who you know what? Let me ask you this. How much of your fear of Chipotle, your stigma of Chipotle, how much of that is linked to the cuisine, to the country of origin? You think it's disgusting and it's risky because it's Mexican? I don't want to project, but I think that's what it is, honey. I Don't Think So, Honey. I love Mexican food. It's my favorite food. And if you don't like Mexican food in any kind, I Don't Think So, Honey. That's your loss. Enjoy your fucking Cheerios that you eat for dinner, you fucking idiot plebeian. I love Chipotle. I had it 3 times this week and I loved it. It got better with every single consecutive meal. I Don't Think So, Honey. I had it 3 days in a row. How about that? I Don't Think So, Honey. People who don't like Chipotle, who are too afraid of E. coli, it's harmless. You'll live. It'll be a good story to write in your fucking novel.
And that's 1 minute. I had Chipotle for lunch today, bitch.
That might have been my best.
That was your best one ever.
That was my most impassioned. Okay, I'm proud.
You really spoke well about that lunch food.
Oh, I love it. I love Chipotle so much. You know what? Originally in Colorado, been to the first Chipotle. I've been a ride or die Chipotle stan since 2003.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
That's amazing. Wow. You know, one time I went on a Valentine's Day date to Chipotle. Dylan Marin, we're about to start your 60 seconds. Do you have a topic?
I do.
Great.
Dylan Marin, Las Culturistas.
I don't think so, honey.
I don't think so, honey. Is beginning
now.
I don't think so, honey. Lady Gaga, where is your performance of white allyship for Black Lives Matter? Okay, you have built a fucking career on being a social justice warrior. You came out, and in 2009, I fucking loved you because you accepted awards by saying, this is for God and the gays.
Loved it.
Then last year, you made this amazing, amazing song for The Hunting Ground to talk about sexual assault on college campuses. Fucking amazing. And then this year, amid Colin Kaepernick's amazing protest, where we could at least talk about disagreement, you were chosen as the Super Bowl halftime performer, and you put out a statement that said, you are so glad to do this for the fans, but most importantly, America completely missing an opportunity to say Black Lives Matter. And unless you dedicate your performance to Black Lives Matter and police brutality, I can no longer take you seriously as a pop star who is a social justice warrior.
That's hilarious! Dylan Marin, let me tell you something right now.
I agree with all of it.
That...
isn't I don't think
it's
so,
It's how
honey.
You do I don't think so, honey. For everyone, every piece of shit that's going to come on the show and that's been on the show so far, fuck you.
That you
You haven't done it right.
Dylan Marin just took a pop star to task.
She will hang her head. And it was You're because so of right. this episode. And if you've been on this show, fuck you.
I never made the connection from her Super Bowl, her halftime show opportunity to Colin Kaepernick. To Colin Kaepernick.
Wow.
Yeah. She needs to be an ally. She can't just...
Well, she's been completely silent about that.
Yes, she can't. But that's the thing. She can't be a single-issue activist pop star.
Well, now she's...
She hasn't been. I'm sorry. I will say it. She has not been. She's been an advocate for sexual assault victims. She's been an advocate for the gays. I want to give her some credit. She's put herself out
she's
there.
She's put herself out there, I think. And
she has put herself out there. I also...
Therefore,
expect
we expect more, yes.
from my girl because I loved her.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, just deep love, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was astounded by this amazing woman who could blend her very pop, very mainstream entertainment with, like, real. I mean, she gave a speech on Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right.
With a senator. She was like actually pairing with lawmakers to.
She made transgender a lyric whenever songs.
Right.
You know? Okay, but can I ask you
she
this?
She did throw a D at the end, but you know, well.
Sure. Totally. She
you're
said.
You're Lebanese, you're Orient.
She said Orient. Yeah. Okay. and I'm still on board. So, okay, but here, can I ask you this? Would it be. Distasteful of her to, I mean, it wouldn't be distasteful of her to show support. Would she be taking up, my question is, would she be taking up space over another pop star such as Beyonce, who is so vocal, or Kendrick Lamar?
No,
or
because she just has to perform white allyship.
Yes.
She has to show what it's, which she's so smart. Yeah. I know she knows what that is. Mm-hmm, you know, like it's.
She would do it tastefully.
Yeah. And just like, but that's exactly what she did with gay rights. She. You know, she identifies as bisexual, I believe. Yeah, and
a lot of pop stars renege on that, but right,
but,
sure.
But she actively also, you know, championed other people. She walked the red carpet in a meat dress for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but with escorted by military people, and so she's always been able to really. She has been able to marry American institutions with new ways of thinking about them. This is for God and the gays. Mm-hmm. And I wish she could do that about, like, this is for America, and this is also where I stand on police brutality.
Wow.
So I have high hopes for her. And
Look, we can't forget her most compelling advocacy for
eggs.
Art.
Arriving in eggs,
which I think is her best
egg movie. Transport.
Yeah. That is the funniest fucking thing, and she knows how fun. That's when I was sold on her. I was like, God, she's fucking.
I
like,
just
what's
did.
Your
I
Gaga
just did,
golden moment. After sorry,
I just did a show, Matteo Lane and Christy Cielo hosted Battle of the Divas at Union Hall, and it was so fun. It's going to happen again on November 9th, you guys, and I'll be back.
Wow.
But I defended Beyonce, and David Mazzoni defended Lady Gaga, and I knew the moment I lost. I did lose. Yeah. Beyonce lost in the Battle of Divas versus Lady Gaga because David whipped out the egg.
The egg is...
And I was like, honestly, you can't compete with her arriving in an egg at the VMAs. You can't compete with that.
Grammys. She pressed
the Grammys? Up, oh, Grammys.
It was the Grammys on the right. And like while she was in the egg on the red carpet, she like pressed her face up against it and was like, she was like, I'm trapped.
Like as
I'm
if she was trying to serve herself.
So funny.
Oh, God. I love it. Guys, I'm a little sad.
Why? About what?
Because my instinct was to be like righteous towards like Taylor Swift, like,
no,
about
come
this
on.
Thing, and I fear that like, and I'm like talking about how like social, like I feel like I don't know.
No,
I feel
no,
like,
no, no,
I feel
no, no.
like part of my sense
don't be
of humor
sad.
About this whole situation is dimmed.
Well, no, that's first
I
of all,
I can't be. I don't know.
It'll be over soon. And second of all, this was an I don't think so, honey, sandwich with pop star activism bread. In a fun little slip
fun
of
little Chipotle Sofrida's middle.
Sofrida's middle. Tofu.
I think that the message of this I don't think so, honey, is we expect more of our girls.
We do.
We do.
No. I mean this very seriously.
Go.
If you are a pop star who is going to adopt a socially progressive platform to sell an album,
such as Taylor
sell it
Swift.
For every fucking album after
yes.
that. You can't use feminism and pop feminism. To sell
and white your, feminism at that and, for that matter
yes oh. white feminism squad goals
Uzu Aduba is your token get
yeah.
out
get out
we were Bowen and I went to that Taylor Swift concert and Uzu Aduba came trotting out and we knew she was the token and we looked at each other
we're
like this
come
doesn't feel
on
right. I want to end on this
not Uzu
Kelly Clarkson called Donald Trump repulsive
love it
thank you Kelly you've always been my number one girl
guys
Dylan,
thank
Marin,
you so much.
I love you so much.
I love
I think
you guys.
That, I think
you.
You're perfect.
I think you guys are amazing.
You're the most perfect human being on this planet.
I think that you're beautiful, so. And I think you're using your powers for good, and I think God fucking bless.
God.
Praise
God
Allah.
Fucking bless
praise
and keep Dylan
Allah.
Marin. Praise Buddha, praise Shiva, Vishnu, and all
and
of the
God
gods.
Herself.
And God herself, Mama.
Inshallah, you have amazing success.
Inshallah.
Now, this has been the Las Costuristas podcast. We're going to be missing you guys. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break, but Bowen, I hope you have a wonderful time.
Matt, I hope you have a wonderful time.
Oh, I'm going to get my life on the fucking Revenge of the Mummy.
And I'm going to get my ride on the fucking Tron ride, honey.
Girl, you better send me...
I'll send you. I'll
reviews and photos and videos.
I'll FaceTime.
Can you do an on-ride video?
No, that's so... I don't think so, honey.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Forever. Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.